This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions.
We had a big sale of corn to China, but beans are the ones that wanted to party on a Friday. Analysis from Market Ninja Darren Newsom on deck.
Live from who knows where via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we cap off the week with a visit from Darren Newsom, and in the final segment, I will update you. The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now filling in for Chip Flory from Zahner Ag Hedge, Ted Seifert.
Woo! Happy Friday, buddy. It feels like this has been an extremely long week, huh?
It really does feel like it's been a really, really long week.
Yeah.
Really long.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, yeah, I mean, unprecedented. It's that word. I feel like I've worn it out this week. But I mean, these are situations that I don't think any of us have lived through before. And man, it is awkward. That is the best way I can put it. It is an awkward feeling. You know, for a lot of people, that translates into panic. I'm not panicking, but I am uncomfortable. I do not like that I can't go down to my office starting Monday. I do not like that. I can't get a haircut. We've talked about that all week. I don't like that I can't go get a haircut. I don't need one, but I don't like that I can't get one. And crazy times we live in, man. Hey, you know what? Before we go too far in the show, there's something I do want to say. A friend of the show, a friend of mine, I should say friends of mine, the Nigg family up in South Dakota, their house just burnt to the ground a couple nights ago. And I want to say a heartfelt, we're thinking about you guys, because that is a tragic thing to be happening in a worst possible scenario time frame. So everybody, you know, thoughts and prayers out for that family up in South Dakota. And it's a good example of, hey, you know, things and times can feel really bad, but it can always be worse. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's rough, though.
That's rough, man. All right. All right, it's Friday. We had a good day today in the beans, at least, and wheat wanted to come along with it, so that's good news. You know, speaking of news, man, what do you got? Let's talk about the news for the day, huh?
Well, Ted, wheat futures built on yesterday's price strength as millers report they need wheat to replace flour citizens have purchased from stores in relation to the coronavirus. USDA said private exporters sold 340,000 metric tons of hard red winter wheat for delivery to China in the new crop marketing year. That's the first sale of hard red winter wheat to China since late 2017. The combination of domestic and export demand spurred buying in futures to end the week. May hard red winter wheat was 3.5 cents higher at 4.69. May soft red firmed 4.25 cents to 5.39 1/4. May spring wheat gained 3 cents to end the day at 5.22 3/4. Man, we got the double whammy of good news. We've got solid domestic demand, solid export demand, and you know the cherry on top is that export demand comes from China, bro.
Yeah, absolutely, and fantastic, right? I mean, we've been waiting for China to buy ever since this deal got signed. They've kind of picked at it just a little bit in soybeans, but to get a wheat sale, that's fantastic. To get a corn sale, you're going to talk about that in a second. That's fantastic. But also, we've been talking about all week. When we're running to the store to stock up, a lot of that is wheat products. We're seeing a demand for wheat that we haven't seen in a long time. Right. All good things for wheat right now. It's the counter coronavirus trade right now. That's fantastic.
Well, and it's you know, wheat was an unexpected player in this. I don't think anybody really expected for wheat to be the one that took off to the upside first on Chinese demand.
Yeah, we all were looking for soybeans, and we've seen a couple of sales come through to unknown destinations that we were thinking were soybeans. But yeah, to see something in wheat and to see a big number in corn,
yeah,
it's encouraging. And that, but
you really want me to say that number, don't you?
I do. Let's go get to it, buddy.
All right.
Get to it.
Well, corn futures today were mixed with nearbys ending the day slightly lower. Traders are looking for the May contract to post a close above 353 as confirmation the upside is clear. USDA's daily reporting service this morning said private exporters reported the sale of 756,000 metric tons of corn to China for delivery before the end of August. Woo. The sale was the biggest to China since July 2013 and the first large-scale sale since the phase one trade deal was signed in January. But Ted, ethanol industry concerns, limited buyer interest, offsetting the solid export demand news. And what a shame. We sell 756,000 metric tons of corn to China. And May corn futures, 1¾ cents lower, 343. July, off a penny and a half, 349.5. Deese corn closed at 363¼. That's unchanged. Not the response that I was expecting from a big sale to China.
Yeah, you know, I forgot to tell you before the show to get the sad trombone button ready, but there you go. Anticlimactic. And the idea is that, wow, that 750,000, it's great, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to the demand that's been lost by not driving, by not taking public transportation, by not flying. The energy markets are in turmoil right now. Ethanol is not excluded from that in the least. So that's the problem. And we're going to have to work through it. And we're going to talk to Darren about how we could possibly do that.
Outstanding. Well, soybean futures screamed higher again in today's trade. USDA reports private exporters sold 110,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to unknown destinations during the 2019-20 marketing year. Watchers say that may confirm rumors of Chinese businesses this week out of the Pacific Northwest. Logistical snarls at Brazilian ports related to coronavirus have Chinese importers eyeing U.S. supplies. Weekly soybean stocks in China have fallen to their lowest level since at least 2010. Chinese national soy meal inventories fell below the average of the past 10 years, hinting at solid near-term demand. May bean futures were 19¼ cents higher at 862.5. July gained 16¾ to 864¾. November bean futures closed at 860¾, up 12¼ cents on the day, baby.
Yeah, baby. All right, listen, Davis, this is the story. The soybeans are the story. And the reason being is because our ending stocks are not huge like they are in corn and arguably wheat as well. And listen, if China's going to come in and buy, look, first of all, we don't lose as much soybean demand from the energy sector because biodiesel is a thing, but we're crushing soybeans regardless because of the soybean meal. So whether the soybean oil stocks build or not, okay, maybe they take something out of crush margins, but it's not going to stop us from crushing beans. We have a meal demand. Domestically, we have a meal demand, and with Argentina potentially shutting down ports, Brazil potentially shutting down ports, we might have a whole lot of export demand for meal too. So all of a sudden, we've got a really rather bullish outlook for soybeans. If China continues to buy and our meal keeps rolling, wow, this could get real interesting. And you know, we've been talking about it with Brian and Dwayne the last couple of days. There's upside potential here in the beans. We can run through those ending stocks very quickly, especially if China's buying fairly aggressively. And the purchases that we saw this week from China, even though it wasn't focused on the soybeans, that really gets people thinking that China's now back to the market. They are back to buying from the United States. They're going to make good on the phase one trade deal, or at least try to. And that just gives us some warm and fuzzy feelings on soybeans. And what a dramatic turn we saw here late in the week for soybeans. You felt it earlier in the week that beans wanted to go higher, but the pressure in corn was limiting that. Once you get a little bit of pressure off of corn, beans are taking the lead and they kind of want to run with it. I'm very curious to see what next week brings.
Absolutely. Well, I got to hustle here. On the livestock side, April live cattle were 355 higher at 98.65, and August cattle firmed $1.10 to 90.75. April feeders were $4.70 higher, 118.82.5. And on the snout side, April lean hogs were 42.5 cents higher at 61.57.5, and July hogs fell 207.5 to 70.37.5. Mixed futures there in the lean hogs. We had some decent strength in the cutout, but cash bids slipped just slightly. That kind of kept a lid on it. Ted.
Davis, I knew you could do it, buddy. I had faith in you. So, hey, listen, everybody, we're going to be talking to Nared Newsom. Come on back to AgriTalk.
...2019 marks 40 years of Syngenta and its legacy company's work in seed treatment research and innovation. Ross Weichel, head of Syngenta Seed Care in North America, says a commitment to a robust pipeline is key to success for their customers. Ross joins us now. Hello, Ross. Tell me a little bit about that commitment to developing new solutions.
We've become one of the best innovators in the industry because of the resources we invest to keep our R&D engine humming. On average, we spend over 10 years and nearly $280 million to develop novel seed treatment molecules. Our current new product lineup and pipeline are truly tremendous.
Thanks, Ross. We'll hear more from Ross next week, but for more stories from Syngenta, head over to www.syngentathrive.com.
The sounds of success vary from person to person. Success sounds like this to a Credenz soybean grower. Along with 43 new varieties this year, Credenz soybeans come with agronomic expertise from BASF. That means expert advisors who bring local insights on seed selection, management decisions, and crop protection options. Knowing the kind of success you're shooting for? That's smart. Talk to your authorized Credenz retailer or local BASF seed advisor. Always read and follow label directions.
Pivot BioProven is the first ever nitrogen-producing microbe that supplies nitrogen directly to the plant, helping maximize yield. Just ask Zach from Oklahoma.
The average was about a 5 to 6 bushel an acre benefit. Not only is that more money in my pocket, but it's less money I had to spend on fertilizer and wear and tear on my side dressing sprayer.
Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
And then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon. Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit Valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Weathering the Storm, a special report focusing on Mother Nature's potential impact on the 2020 growing season, is coming to Ag Day, U.S. Farm Report, and AgriTalk later this month. Brought to you by Pivot BioProven, the nitrogen-producing microbes that stay put, weather or not.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifried. I am from Zahner Ag Hedge, and I'm filling in for Mr. Chip Flory here on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it to the end of the week. I wasn't sure a few times this week if that would actually happen. I've said it a number of times in the last couple of days, but this is just the way I really feel, and I can't. This phrase just keeps popping in my head, but life during wartime, man. This is definitely what that feels like. So, whew, Friday, finally. In the meantime, we are talking to Darren Newsom of Darren Newsom Analysis Inc. Wow, that's a mouthful. And you know what? A lot of times, Darren and I get together and we talk, and sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't. Mostly, we don't. And it usually makes for an interesting conversation. So, I'm very curious to what Darren has to say today. We purposely don't really talk a lot about markets coming into stuff like this because it's more fun when you don't know what's coming. So without further ado, Darren, man, how's it going? How you doing today?
Going well, Ted. You know, like you, it has been a fascinating couple of weeks, you know, just to watch everything play out. You know, there's, you know, it brings to mind markets that we've seen before. You know, you watch the stock markets, it certainly reminds us of 1987. You watch the, you know, the grains and livestock markets, and you know, you mm-hmm. can kind of get the same feel that you did back then. So it really has been a fascinating couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting that you say 1987 because, you know, when I'm looking at the energies markets, We had crude oil come down and test the 2001 lows earlier in this week. Actually, we got through them, and we're trying as hard as we can to hold on to it. But then the next major target there is the 1987 lows. And, you know, I'm talking about crude oil because ethanol is really feeling the sting of the weakness that we're seeing across the energy market. And so you get a sale like a 750,000 metric ton sale to China, and the market wants to rejoice on that. But within minutes, we take all of that enthusiasm away. You know, so what's going on there? Tell us more about that, Darren.
Well, okay. I mean, I know a lot of people are frothing at the mouth over this sale, but it was already factored in the market. You know, and I know you don't believe in spreads and what they show us. We've talked about that before. But if we watch what the spreads were telling us, you know, a number of days back, we were seeing all of this commercial buying coming in across the board. Corn, soybeans, wheat, we were seeing this incredible commercial buying indicated by the spreads. So we knew something was already bubbling up. So when the news broke today, it's, okay, this is the sale that was behind it. But there's nothing else. I mean, if we look at the three legs of domestic demand, they're all in trouble. There's talk about feed yards shutting down. We saw news earlier this week that, you know, there's going to be some Brazil packing plants shut down. Not that it's happening here yet, but what if it does? Exports are going nowhere. Okay, so we made a 30 million bushel sale. For the year, we're still projected to come up about 400 million bushels short of last year's shipments. So, you know, I know everyone wants to be excited, and I know everyone wants to be jumping for joy, but basis has been collapsing lately, and there's a reason. A lot of panic selling of the cash markets, the cash bushels held over from last year, starting to hit the market. We're starting to turn our attention towards new crop, and we just don't have any solid demand across the board, any of the three areas that we look at in corn.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, but obviously the ethanol issue, that's a real one. We know that. We know that people are driving less. I mean, I can tell you the last 3 days that I've gone downtown, my hour and 45 minute commute, I set a record yesterday in 37 minutes. I've never been able to come close to that. The best that I had before was 44 minutes, and that was on, I think, Christmas Eve or you know, right in the center of a major, major holiday. So that part I get. The feedlots shutting down, though. I mean, you look at how cash cattle trade, you look at what box beef prices did this week. I would think that there's maybe a little bit of optimism that came back towards the end of the week that maybe feedlots aren't shutting down. I don't know. It's hard to gauge the fear and the panic and how much the packers are buying into that, or if they're really just following the cash markets. I mean, do you think feed yards are going to start shutting down here?
I think there's a chance, and it depends on how long this lasts. But I agree. You know, you're going to be shocked, but I agree with you. The best thing that we saw in the cattle market this week, in the last couple of weeks, actually, was the fact box beef, the fact that cash prices were able to hold together relatively well, you know, despite this collapse in the future. So what we saw was this incredible movement basis in the cattle market. So that is a plus. It's just, how long does this continue? Do we start to see, you know, do we have to start trimming workforces, not, you know, not letting them come into the packing houses? This is where the problem could come in. You know, we're hearing some cattlemen losing all kinds of money in this situation right now. By and large, I think we're going to be okay on the feed side. I'm not as concerned about feed as I am for ethanol and export.
Yeah.
But it's something that we have to keep an eye on.
So is this an opportunity or a chance for China to come in? And, you know, because we've talked about China wanting ethanol in the past. They've talked about how they want ethanol to help kind of clear up their major air pollution issues that they've had. Could China come in and buy ethanol? Would that even save the ethanol industry from what we're facing right now?
You know, they could. I mean, but anything could happen. Will they? It's unlikely. I mean, I always find it interesting with all the proponents of, you know, of this sort of, you know, relying on China to save all of our markets, yet they're our great enemy. You know, so to say, yeah, you know, China can save our ethanol, they can save our corn, they can save our soybean meal, they can save our wheat, they can save this, they can save that. Why would they? I mean, they'll buy what they need. Let's just be honest. They're going to buy what they need when the market dictates it's the best buy for them to do. And that's exactly what's going to drive this thing.
Well, I mean, it depends, because if they're going to live up to this phase one trade deal, they're going to have to buy more than what they need.
Do you believe that?
Especially at these prices.
What about the caveats that were left in intentionally in that deal? Number one, they didn't have to disrupt any of their relationships with the suppliers that they have right now. And number two, mm-hmm. the market still sets the standard for where they can buy from. Okay,
but they also don't really want the tariffs being put on them again, and they don't want to deal with that, especially in this climate where we've got so much global unrest and stock markets, equity markets mm-hmm. as a whole. Are sharply lower. They're feeling that pain too. I think to some extent they really want to make this deal work.
We'll see.
I floated an idea across the last couple of days that, you know, if I'm China, and they're smart, they are smart traders. Let's just say that. They are smart traders. And what would a smart trader do in this situation, given this number of 13.5 billion that they have to hit? If you look at the current prices, holy cow, that's hard to do. It's way more bushels than they need. Why don't they come in and buy the board, flash some sales to get the market all excited, continue to buy the board, make this thing run up $2, and then buy all the cash beans at 10.5, so that they're paying the higher price. It's easier for them to hit that $36.5 billion, but their hedge accounts are showing a $2 positive gain. And they're essentially getting everything done at these lower prices. Would that make any sense to you, or am I crazy?
You've put some thought into this.
You like it? Yeah.
Anything like that is certainly possible. But I mean, Ted, I'm too stupid. I like to keep things simple. What did we see here recently? We saw the cash market. We saw the nearby futures. You know, all these things that you just mentioned. They dropped into the lowest percentages that we've seen going back to something like 2014.
Right.
So, I mean, if it's no more complicated than buy low and sell high, this was a buying opportunity for them. So they step in and they buy a little bit. Are they worried about that mythical whatever number it is that was in the phase one deal? No, not at all, because we left those two caveats in that I mentioned before. Yeah, they're going to do some buying, but we just have to get used to the fact, and we have to quit, you know, possibly trying to build up hope that it's not this way, but we are a secondary supplier unless Brazil has a problem. You mentioned ports shutting down. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. Weather issues. That's a problem. All of these things could still happen, but we're a secondary supplier, just as Brazil used to be the secondary supplier when we were the dominant supplier.
Right. And when you say secondary supplier, you're talking about soybeans for Brazil and, let's say, meal for Argentina. We're still really the dominant supplier of corn for the rest of the world, although our sales this year haven't really shown that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's easy to say, but the numbers don't back it up.
Right.
The world's looking elsewhere for corn. And, you know, yeah, we had a nice sale today, but, I mean, we're still running. Oh, let's see. What did I say we're running now? Let me pull this up real quick. We're running, you know, total sales and shipments, we're still 30% behind last year. Now, granted, last year's first half was extraordinary, but we're still running slow. I don't think anything outstanding out there right now.
Right. So, basically, when we get back from the break, I want to talk about what the strategy is for corn and soybeans going forward. But everybody, we're talking to Darren Newsom. Come on back to AgriTalk.
Farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Hey, it's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. The number of coronavirus cases stands at 245,000, with deaths numbered at 10,031. According to figures compiled by Johns Hopkins, the number of cases in the U.S. is now at 14,250, with 205 deaths. Researchers in the U.S., China, and Europe are racing to produce a vaccine for COVID-19. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wants to begin a third round of virus relief talks today. The Chinese government will take measures to speed up the return to work for millions of its citizens. U.S. exporters have sold at least two cargoes of hard red winter wheat and at least two cargoes of soybeans to Chinese importers this week. And consumer hoarding of basic at-home cooking essentials amid the COVID-19 pandemic has created a temporary shortage of flour on grocery store shelves. Pro Farmer members get your daily advice updates at ProFarmer.com and check your inbox for First Thing Today.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifried from Zaner Ag Hedge, and I'm filling in for Chip Flory here on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. We are talking to Darren Newsom. We were kind of talking about some general stuff going in through the last segment, and now I think we're going to get a little bit more specific. But before we do that, Davis, why don't you give us our quick market recap?
Well, Ted, May hard red winter wheat was 3.5 cents higher at 4.69. May soft red firmed 4.25 cents to 5.39 1/4. May corn futures were 1.75 cents lower at 3.43. December corn closed at 3.63 1/4, unchanged on the day. May soybean futures were 19.25 cents higher, 8.62 1/2. July beans gained 16 3/4, 8.64 3/4. And what the heck, November 2020 bean futures closed at 8.60 3/4, up 12 1/4 today. April live cattle were 355 higher at 98.65. April feeders 470 higher at 118.82 1/2. And April lean hog futures were 42.5 cents higher at 61.57 1/2. And dare I push this button?
Hey, Grandma! Can I have some nonsense?
Not until you finish your AgriTalk.
AgriTalk!
There's your quick market recap. Now back to you, Ted.
Wow, Davis, your buttons have gotten really pretty impressive, my friend. That's wow. Okay. All right. We're talking to Darren Newsom. We had some kind of broader picture stuff, but let's get to the nitty gritty. Darren, when we look at the corn market And we talk about all the struggles and all the issues, the upstream problems that we have right now. Where do you see this corn going, and what should we be doing about that?
Well, hopefully, and I know hope is a four-letter word, but hopefully folks have some hedges on in place. Let's look at the old crop. You know, they should be sold out of old crop. There was ample opportunity, you know, before basis started to collapse. If you had it hedged, you could certainly close out the hedges and sell cashes. So I'm going to guess, even though I know there's a lot of folks who are still holding old crops. So let's go on the assumption that those folks need to do something. We're not just going to go straight down. I think today was very disheartening, the fact that we saw you saw a loss, and some of it was coming from commercial selling, and I think we're going to see basis break down this afternoon as well. So we're going to have to wait and see if we can't catch some swings in here and maybe get some rallies to clean out the last of the old crop. New crop should also be, have some hedges depending on how your comfort level. So they should have some of that in place. Then you've got your government crop insurance against it. So I shouldn't say will, because there's nothing definite in the commodity business, but we should see, at least one weather-related rally that's going to give us an opportunity if we don't have something locked in. I'm not looking for huge prices right now, but, I think there is the opportunity for these markets to rally at some point. They're oversold, and if we can keep soybeans moving and if wheat keeps moving up, I think corn could see a sympathy bounce, if nothing else. The problem's going to continue to be crude oil. It ducked its head below $20 today. And as long as that continues, as long as the price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia that's affecting the United States as well, it's just going to be tough for corn to gain any ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. A lot of people have talked about 308 or possible two handle in front of corn at some point. I know you've said anything is possible, but do you think that's something that's likely at this point?
It's a great way of asking it. The difference between probability, possible and probable.
Right.
If I look out at the Dees corn contract, where we closed today, we were at 363. I just don't know that. I don't know if you were asking about old crop or new crop. I just don't think we're going to see new crop go down there yet. The issue is that, as we get deeper into the spring, we're going to be forgetting about the old crop issues, and we're just going to be focusing on new crop. And, if we have a better spring than last year and the crop gets planted and everything, it's going to be tough to hold this market up, and it could certainly chew lower. I think sub three, a little bit low right now, but, I'm not going to discount it completely.
Right. I say it again, life during wartime, who knows? I mean, who knows if we're stuck in our houses for 6 months or 6 weeks or who knows, right? So lots of unknowns out there, but I think protection is the way to go. There's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of negative things happening, especially for that corn market. Now, soybeans, in my view, are maybe a little bit of a different story. We've talked about it at length for a while. I mean, even a year ago, that this year, potentially, we could run out of soybeans because of what happened in the spring last year. And
It's interesting you keep going back to that, because I'm going to guess you're still basing that on USDA's numbers. Mm-hmm. If we look at what the cash market is telling us, so the national average cash price for 2019-20, I think USDA's got something like a 10.5 index stocks to use, but the cash market itself, correlating it back over the marketing years going back to 2014-15, it's actually showing us to have like a 27% ending stocks to use. So, I mean, there's a great difference between what USDA is saying and what the cash market is telling us.
That's right.
I'm going with what the cash market is saying. I'm not one of those beating the drum that we're going to run out of soybeans. Number one, we don't have any demand except for crush demand right now. Yes, I think soybeans are a buy down here. I think we're going to see them go up again. They got into the lower percentages of the price distribution range. I'm not, I can't make the case fundamentally that we're going to run out of soybeans, because, market's not just not telling us that. So, we've got a lot of support coming from soybean meal right now, and I think really that is the backbone of the soybean market.
Well, sure. I mean, domestically, that's what we use soybeans for. I mean, there's really only two things that we use soybeans for. It's either the crush or for export. And
if we don't have any exports, we have to rely on crush.
Right. But if exports to China were to pick up, I mean, that is a possibility. Yeah. We have to, when we talk about possibility versus probability, maybe it's not probable. I mean, a lot of people would argue it's not. But the possibility is that China comes in And, you know, I'll contend that I think the cash market is reflecting that they don't believe that China's going to buy until we actually see the proof in the pudding. And so I think the cash market is artificially showing that we have more soybeans than what we really do, because the market knows that if we get planting off this year, that ending stocks figure will bounce right back up in this sort of climate of lack of export demand.
Okay, let me make sure I've got this straight. The cash market, which is the actual intrinsic value, is not gauging the situation correctly, but USDA, who really has no idea what supplies we have and is making guesses about demand, is actually more realistic with its numbers than what the actual intrinsic value of the market is. Is that correct?
Well, I didn't say that it wasn't gauging it correctly. I'm saying that there isn't any fear of us running out of soybeans right now amongst the cash market, amongst the end user, amongst the crusher.
Why would that be?
Because they don't think the exports are going to be there. Yeah, because they don't think the exports are going to be there. I feel like if those exports start popping up, the tune changes very quickly. First of all of your funds that are short soybeans right now, they have to swim a different direction in a hurry. But, you know, we'll see.
And that's an interesting point. And I know I just look at the legacy report on the CFTC, but last week's legacy report showed that they actually increased their long. So it wasn't that they're piling on their shorts. They were actually increasing their long net long position in futures only. So, you know, interesting take on it.
Well, futures and options, I mean, that's the way we want to look at it. And plus, also, you know, that's as of last Tuesday. I mean, consider what's happened, especially the early part of this week. But either way, I agree with you. I think there is upside potential for soybeans for here. But, you know, who knows how much? And again, who knows what China does? Who knows what happens with coronavirus? But just from what you're saying, and to your point, we are at historically a level where we should be buying soybeans. And, you know, I think the market's responding to that. I think, China's starting to respond to that a little bit. Real quick on the wheat, you know, that's been sort of the anti-coronavirus trade. You know, we've had a run on the grocery stores on flour, on wheat-based things. It's interesting to see how gluten-free kind of falls to the wayside. Certainly the celiacs out there, the ones that are, you know, seriously. But the trendy gluten-free guys are guys and gals have kind of moved away from that. What do you see for wheat upside potential? I mean, is this just a flash in the pan, or do we have legs here?
I think it's got some legs. Now, would it be surprising to see it back off a little bit next week? No, not if we see some rains over both the Southern Plains and the Midwest. You know, we're a ways away from really building up any sort of problem or concern regarding the new crop market. We did see a great deal of buying in the old crop, and again, it's because, as you pointed out, you know, nobody's worrying about gluten-free at this point. Just as, you know, you look at the meat counters, the real meat is all gone. The same thing could be said about vegetarianism and so on in a crisis. But I still like the wheat market in here. You know, obviously, the crop's going to be smaller. We have fewer acres. We're probably going to, you know, with the moisture that we have right now across parts of the Southern Plains, it's probably going to get off on a better footing once it clearly breaks dormancy and starts to move into growing season. So, you know, we're going to have to wait to see what, you know, how many times we try to kill it. I do like the wheat market in here. I just think it's going to back off a little bit and then start to make a run again.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. So, you know, buying opportunities for those of us that are traders, you know, but for wheat producers, you feel like there's a big need to really protect the downside? I mean, there's a lot of risk, you know, involved with everything that's happening politically and everything like that.
I don't think if just from a trader point of view, I'm not really looking at selling wheat in here. I do think it's going to come down early next week. If I'm a producer, you know, and I might have 25, no more than 50% on, you know, covered for this coming harvest as far as winter wheat goes, I'm probably not going to load up on any more down at these levels, you know, particularly with the market trying to indicate that sooner or later it's going to make at least an attempt at rallying. But then once we do get a rally and we know that we have, you know, that we have a better idea that we might actually have a crop in the field, albeit smaller than usual, I might make a look at making some sales if we get a decent rally out of this thing.
Okay. Well, hey, Darren, man, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I love the conversations that we have, even though we don't necessarily have the same opinion, but that's what makes it fun, right? In the meantime, man.
Absolutely right, Ted.
Yeah, good talking to you. Stay safe. You know, it's crazy out there. So thanks, Darren. We'll talk to you later. Everybody else, come on back to AgriTalk.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services. Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Tom Hemisath is from State Center, Iowa.
We didn't have as much sudden death syndrome this year as we have had in years past, and part of that's just because we've covered lots of acres with Olivo. We had a couple of growers that elected to not treat seed at the end of the year because of the late planting, and those areas did show some sudden death syndrome. So we did see it appear in fields and reduce yields. The thing we notice on Olivo beans year in and year out is we maintain plant health throughout the growing season, and we allow that plant to fully express its genetic potential. The cyst nematodes are something that we deal with in this area. It's an invisible pest that has chronic effects on the crop, and we just don't notice those effects when we have Olivo-treated beans. Olivo is a really critical component in our operation. I think it just takes a couple of issues off the table and allows the full yield potential to be reached.
BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions. Olivo is a registered trademark of BASF, all rights reserved.
Today we're going to talk about key technologies to cut your production cost. For the spraying pest, let's consider the ExactApply nozzle control technology. With this technology, we've seen as much as a 5% decrease in inputs when utilizing the individual nozzle control capabilities and kerf compensation. If you think about a 12,000 acre producer in Western Canada that farms both wheat and canola, and if they're doing three applications a season with that sprayer, that could be as much as $15 an acre per each application. So 5% is about 75 cents an acre of savings. Multiply that over the three trips they're going to make across the 12,000 acres, that's a total savings of $27,000. So you may be used to running AutoTrac on your tractor or your sprayer, but have you thought about implementing that technology on your combine? Let's say you're a producer in the southern Great Plains that has wheat and double crop soybeans. If you can reduce overlap by as much as 5%, that could be $1, $1.10 an acre. You know, over those 6,000 acres that you're harvesting, that's $6,000 plus that's in your pocketbook by just implementing that AutoTrac technology. Consider a 12,000 acre small grains producer in Western Canada that farms 3,000 acres of canola. Being over their target seed rate by just 10% could be as much as $6 per acre of wasted seed. Over 3,000 acres, that's $18,000 of wasted seed costs that producer could put back into his pocket by having a good calibration and hitting that target rate. ActiveCal is a technology on our newer air carts that allows for automatic adjustment for seed size and density to help producers hit very accurately their target rate. So technology can help us reduce our input costs at seeding, during application, and at harvest. And to learn more about that, go see your John Deere dealer. I'm Yancey Wright, and this has been John Deere Lead TV.
You can't see us, and we can't see you, so don't go changing. Listen just the way you are to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifert. I'm from Saner Ag Hedge, filling in for Chip Flory here on a Friday. Happy Friday, everyone. Wow, what a week that was. Gotta say, kind of glad we made it. Didn't know about that for a little while, but kind of glad we made it. And yeah, you know, markets, wow, what a roller coaster ride. You know, the beginning of this week, it was just beating everything down with a lead pipe. I mean, soybeans, corn, really everything. But what a difference, thank you, Davis. What a difference it made in the end of the week. I mean, soybeans come roaring back, corn reluctant for the reasons we talked about earlier and throughout the show. But soybeans really coming back. I like the look of the soybeans on a chart. And Darren, thanks for coming on the show, buddy. Special thanks to Darren. I really like having Darren on. If you guys haven't noticed, I have Darren on quite often. And it's because we're not always on the same page. And I really like his outlook on things because it kind of checks me. And that's great. But, you know, I look at the soybean market. We do agree on the fact that I think soybeans have upside potential from here. How much, though, I think is where we disagree. You know, his analysis of the cash market is certainly intriguing. It's something that I always keep an eye on. But at the same time, I also realize that the cash market isn't immune to fundamentals and isn't immune to sort of speculating on where things are going to go in the future. And I think the cash market is just understating, or I guess overstating, the amount of soybean supplies that are out there because there's really no fear. There's no fear of China coming in and buying all of our soybeans. We just don't feel like the doubt about this phase one trade deal has been so strong ever since it happened. And there's been so many things that have happened, coronavirus and China not buying, that have happened since then to really convince us that, okay, this isn't real. Well, what if we start believing that it is real? I think the cash market will really respond to that. And I do think there is a world that exists that we could potentially run out of soybeans this year. But who knows? You know, it's going to be an interesting year. The next couple of months are going to be very, very interesting. And what I would like to say before we hang it up for the week and, you know, Chip gets back in the saddle next week, I would like to say that I really feel like while maybe the worst of the coronavirus news is not behind us, I can't imagine what else is bad is going to hit us. And that doesn't mean we can't go lower. It doesn't mean that there won't be more bad news and maybe coronavirus really starts getting out of control compared to what our expectations are. But man, I mean, we are living a life during wartime, and the soybean market, the grain markets are a reflection of that. We've got so much going on there. So anyways, it is Friday. We've got Davis. We've got fuels and FERT. We definitely want to get to that. So without further ado, Davis, take it away, buddy.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report is a service of Pro Farmers Inputs Monitor. For weekly updated fuels and fertilizer prices from across the Midwest and in your crop district, visit profarmer.com. And now, Ted!
Yeah.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. I titled this week's post on the fertilizer markets, Fertilizers Post Mild Price Movement. Seasonally, we are, I don't know if we're due for a bounce. Certainly in years prior, we've seen strength enter the market here as farmers show up and start to get their supplies booked for spring prep work, for side dress later on, and what have you. We have not seen a price response. In fact, prices just sort of laid there this week. Our nutrient composite index is down 0.65 points, a small move on its own, but headed downward is certainly encouraging, especially given what's happening in the December corn futures and the rest of the grains, really. But let me just run down these weekly changes. I've got anhydrous ammonia up $1.31 to a regional average of $508.93. Here comes DAP up
0.25 cents. That's actually, yeah, 418.72. MAP is down 41 cents by the short ton to 407.38. Interesting, MAP is priced correctly when compared to anhydrous ammonia on a pound-for-pound basis. That's our indexed figure. DAP is slightly overpriced currently, and yet we saw them moving in opposite directions. Vitamin K, potash, off 69 cents at 358.64 regionally. UAN 28% really likes where anhydrous ammonia is priced right now. The two of them by the pound of N are in lockstep. 28% down $1.60 this week at $236.39. 32% still a little bit overpriced, but unchanged on the week, $274.39. Now, urea, we've heard some murmurs of some sharp price declines in the wholesale market. The wholesale market is murmuring. It's murmuring urea. And prices are falling there. We had thought maybe we'd see a price increase, but the virus is definitely crimping the upside for urea on the export market. We're down 79 cents this week at 361.58. All right, now let's, one of the things I talked about in my writing this week is, should you or should you not get that fertilizer into your barn, into your storage shed, wherever, if you can get it delivered now? My answer is yes. There's no reason to hoard. Please, for Pete's sake, do not do that. But if you've got it calced out what you're going to need and you have the room for it, you have the facility for it, be it nitrogen, be it phosphates, be it some potash, whatever. If you can do that, I would definitely guarantee that you wouldn't regret it. Not that I expect any problems. I don't expect delivery delays. I don't expect supply shortfalls, but you just never know. There's so much uncertainty going on right now. It really, truly does seem like literally anything can happen. So the best medicine for that is to prepare. And farm diesel, I'm down 3 cents, 231 regionally, compares to last year at $2.45. LP's up 5 cents. Ohio screamed higher in its per gallon price, and that sort of drove us up here. We're up a nickel at $1.51. Like I said, all told, our nutrient composite index fell 0.65 points to 630.25, compared to our 5-year average of 615.74. Get more details at profarmer.com. Ted, thank you so much.
Good job,
you know, you
Davis.
Were talking about crush throughout the show.
Yep.
Crush seemed to keep coming up, and I just want to say, you know who's really crushing it is Ted Seifert.
Thank you, buddy.
We really appreciate you filling in for this week, as we do with all our guest hosts. This week, John Harith has been standing by. Big Apple Joe, he's a freaking rock star. And thank you, beloved listener, for tuning in. Ted, take it away.
Absolutely, everybody. Hey, listen, it's been my absolute pleasure to host the show the last 3 days. You know I love doing it, and I hope to get asked back again sometime soon. In the meantime, thanks, everybody. This is Ted Seifert, Zahner Ag Hedge, signing out. Have a great and safe weekend, everybody.
When weeds get tough, AmVac answers with the power of Impact brand herbicides, proven to control key grasses and tough, glyphosate-resistant broadleaf weeds. Impact is the standard in corn safety. Impact brand herbicides, tough on weeds, not on corn. Get more information at AmVac.com/impact. AmVac, Impact, and Impact Z are trademarks owned by AmVac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Always read and follow label instructions. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide.
Pivot BioProven is the first ever nitrogen-producing microbe that supplies nitrogen directly to the plant, helping maximize yield. Just ask Zach from Oklahoma.
The average was about a 5 to 6 bushel an acre benefit. Not only is that more money in my pocket, but it's less money I had to spend on fertilizer and wear and tear on my side dressing sprayer.
Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.